Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast.
Where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And this is episode number 137, which matches seven stories of
what?
Our Purgatory Mountain. Right. Oh, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about part two of Dante's Divine Comedy, Purgatorio.
I love this part.
It's a good part. It's a good part. Yeah, yeah, it is. People don't read this one. What's the story on this? It seems like everybody loves Inferno, but people don't read the rest of them.
Yeah.
But this was fascinating. Fascinating stuff.
Wasn't it interesting? The structure is so interesting that overall covers all the levels. Yeah. And then, of course, within each level is, our interesting encounters. And
yeah, yeah. Another
thoughts
33
on Dante's
cantos.
Own part, because he's having to think about himself now.
Yes, that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. And the reader, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I noticed, and maybe I just missed it in Inferno, but it seems like he addressed the reader a couple times in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember him doing that in the first part, but maybe he did. Where he actually says, reader, dear reader, blah, blah, blah. And then I just don't remember that in Inferno.
No.
And it may just be something that struck me here, but didn't strike me there.
Well, and either way, that's an interesting point, because we are, of course, being more introspective, too, because we're thinking about our own journey. And when you look at people who are under punishment, well, it's not punishment, but being purged, basically, doing penance, mm-hmm. because it's penance isn't a punishment, but it's a corrective measure to your soul. You stop and you think about some of these circles or these terraces look awfully familiar, like places I'm going to have to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And some not. And Dante does the same thing where he gets to the one which is envy. And someone says, so when you're here. And he goes, well, I don't think I'll have to spend very long here. This isn't really my problem. He goes, I'll be down in pride for a long time. And that's a feeling that I had too, where I go, oh, that rock is going to be awfully heavy, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's for sure. Yeah, and it's interesting how it does compare to hell. Another interesting thing to me is you've got people in purgatory that seem to, you know, not everybody by any means, but that seem to be the same kind of a sinner that was in hell. And it makes you think, okay, well, what is the difference? Why is this person in purgatory and the other person was in hell?
And they, of course, always, when they're telling their story, you're just like, oh my gosh, you were the worst. And then they'll say, and with my dying breath, I said Mary,
mm-hmm.
or I said Christ. So the sinners in purgatory are just as sinful. They've been just as evil as the people in hell, but they chose Christ, even if it was with their last breath. So
yeah.
Dante is saying the state of your soul and your inner motivations at death and in your life, too, are the things that decide where you go.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. one of the things I was so interested in was he gets to this layer where there's all these poets. And he'll go, oh, my gosh, I just loved your stuff. And he'll go, oh, thanks, thanks. But you know who's really good is so-and-so over here. And you think, well, I never saw that in hell. They're mm-hmm. busy saying, I was the best. Don't listen to him.
And, oh, good point. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
There are varying levels of it. This is where Mark Musa, which is the translation we read, his notes are really helpful in pointing out, like, you know, this guy's still going. Oh, yeah, I was pretty good, wasn't I? But this person was better or is just as good but different or something like that. And he goes, so these are souls that aren't fully purged. So you'll see varying levels of unselfishness or humility, and humility not meaning that you have to put yourself down. So you could say, oh, yeah, I was not bad at that, was I? But have you heard this guy? So, it's a real interesting counterpoint to Inferno. And so if all you read is Inferno, you're missing so much. And plus, to me, one of the most interesting things is the very first person they meet is Cato, who is a pagan who committed suicide.
Yeah.
He's the guardian to hell or to purgatory. And you think, well, now hold on. I felt like it was so unfair that the virtuous pagans had their spot in limbo and they knew they'd never have a hope of heaven. But he committed the reason he committed suicide was for freedom. And since purgatory, the notes were saying, since purgatory is actually about freedom and not punishment, he's the perfect person to introduce everybody who comes there to it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. And that is, like you said, you know, when you're presented with him, you're immediately thinking about, okay, well, what's the difference between these folks and the folks before? Excellent, excellent point.
Well, and it also, to me, it shows that everything isn't just black and white, good and evil.
Yeah.
You have to dig deeper, and that's what Dante's going to have to do this whole way up this mountain.
Right. And I also lost the feeling, you remember we were talking when we were talking about Inferno, about, there becomes a point where you're like, well, is Dante throwing people in hell that he doesn't like?
Right.
You know? That went away in this one because you're like, okay, well, there's a larger point being made here. Mm-hmm. And without knowing, you know, this thing is full of notes. I did Mark Moose's translation too, but it's full of notes about the people that he's talking about that are contemporary that I have no idea who they are, and lots of details about various things. But without reading this after Inferno, you could certainly come away with the impression that he just had a list of people that he wanted to get back at,
and he
threw them in hell in Inferno. But now I start to see all that in a different light, like you said that I would, and that worked. It's true.
Yeah, because he's being much. You get to see him being fair. There are enemies of his that have made it to heaven, people who are on the other side. You also see him providing other correctives, like, we're also sorry for Francesca, the first soul that he talks to in hell, really, who is, you know, she gives this long explanation of why she and, I should remember. But anyway, her lover were, you know, well, we just fell into it. It was, we couldn't help ourselves when we committed adultery and all this sort of thing. And then you have in, let's see, why I didn't put page numbers? Why I just put Canto 5? And I'm like, oh, great. So Roman numerals and finding the number. So Pia is giving a very brief explanation because she's asking for prayers. And the only thing she says is, oh, please, when you are in the world again and are quite rested from your journey here, a third soul following on the second said, oh, please remember me. I am called Pia. Siena gave me life, Marema death, as he knows who began it when he put his gem upon my finger, pledging faith. And that's all she says. You don't know anything about her, but it's the way we're supposed to go into confession, right? Just don't make all the excuses. Just say what you did. And try and want to move on. And she's just, okay, here's what happened. But I'm not even going to tell you enough that you know.
That is a really nice contrast there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if you're in there saying, yeah, but I did this because, and blah, blah, blah. Right. You're not really repentant, are you? You're not accepting full responsibility.
Right.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. I like that contrast.
Yeah, I did want to, before we really, really got into it, you know, the idea of purgatory for a lot of people is troubling, although
oh, sure.
maybe, Maybe not for people listening to this. I don't know.
Yeah. So what is purgatory?
Okay. So I have, there's this really fantastic book called Heaven and Hell, Visions of the Afterlife in the Western Poetic Tradition by Lewis Marcos. I highly recommend it. He goes from the Hebrew and Greek versions of hell all the way through, you know, Virgil, Odysseus, Dante, Milton, and up into our own time with, you know, science versus religion. So it's a very interesting book. Yeah, really, really well written. I highly recommend it. And he is a Protestant. And so he's always kind of keeping an eye for everybody's full understanding of what these concepts mean so they really understand what's going on. And this is a bit long, but I thought it was really good. It says, purgatory helps answer a perennial Protestant question. What happens to those who wait until their deathbed to accept Christ, or to those who are saved and then fall back into sin? The Catholic answer is simple. They must first spend time in purgatory, where both their spiritual indolence and their desire for sin will be purged out of them through various punishments. Unlike the punishments of hell, however, which are eternal and retributive, I can't read. The ones in purgatory are temporal and remedial. They have a purpose, and that purpose is to free the saved soul from all bondage to sin. In fact, far from resenting their punishments, the souls in purgatory welcome them. For they know when they have finished the process of purgation, they will be enabled to absorb as much of God's light and love as possible. All impediments washed away, they will be free to participate with their whole being in the glory of God. Purgatory is not about earning our salvation, but having already been saved by Christ's sacrifice on the cross, working with the Spirit to present ourselves as clean vessels. Says the American Christian, in his somewhat adolescent way, asks if all of this is fair. But purgatory is not about fairness, it is about freedom.
Hmm. Yeah.
And also our idea of fairness. Do we really have the big picture to be able to say what, if God's judging somebody, can we say, well, that's not fair?
Yeah, we don't have all the information.
Right.
No doubt. No doubt about that. So, yeah, I've explained purgatory to a lot of people that come in with questions and things, and there is kind of a logical argument for that as well. You know, I think Jimmy Akin is someone who introduced this to a lot of people.
Okay.
But the idea is that, you know, there's a premise that there's not going to be any sin in heaven, or you won't be attached to sin when you're in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I noted I have a couple of notes on purgatory for when I talk to people about this. But
yeah.
But so in Revelations 21:27, it says, but nothing unclean will enter it.
Mm.
And then the second premise is that, you know, we are, of course, are sinners, and we're all attached to sin, you know, whether we're saved or not. We you know, need to go to confession and things. You know, we wouldn't have to do that if we were sin-free. I don't know right. that a lot of people would argue that statement, right? And then it says in 1 John 1:8 that in the NAB version, it says, if we say we are without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. So it's saying basically that. Something that we all know. We're all sinners, right?
Yeah.
So the conclusion, if there's not going to be any sin in heaven, and you're not going to be attached to sin in heaven, and you are a sinner, even if you're saved, then the conclusion has to be there has to be something going on there between death and heaven in order to cleanse you of sin and attachment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, the logical argument for it. You know, well, and there is a lot of thing. You know, there's something in Maccabees too. You know, it's like why pray for someone who's passed away?
Right.
What good does that do anyone if there isn't this period?
Right.
Either they're in heaven or they're not in heaven, because you don't get the keys out of hell, do you? I don't think you do.
Well, and I think somehow I think the feeling can be that you get just washed clean. And when you die, everything's just washed away for you, you know, which brings up two things to me. One is that's not respecting the human person. You are who you are, you know. Yeah. Then the good things get washed away too, because nothing you did really matters. And then the other thing would be, this is Dante's vision, so that we can understand and meditate on these things. Purgatory, nobody knows how long it will take. It could just take an actual meeting with Jesus, and you realize these things instantly. You're sorry instantly. You've worked through it, and it's done in the blink of an eye. No one knows. And so we're not saying that what purgatory is exactly what Dante has here. This is for our benefit.
Yeah, and I think that's vitally an important thing to say, because we are not reading – this is not doctrine. Dante is not stating Catholic belief, you know what am I trying to say here? It's what you just said. This is not.
It's fiction.
Yeah, it's fiction. That's exactly. Thank you. This is a meditation on the meaning of these things in a poetic fashion. This is not what we believe is actually happening. You know, that there's an actual mountain and then there's actual pit and all these things. It's fascinating to think about. The images are incredible. But this is not what we as Catholics officially believe is going on.
If you want to believe it, I don't think it's out of line. But it is interesting to think about. For me, it was profitable, fruitful, I guess you would say, because you think about what the penances those people are undergoing represent, and where in my own soul do I have these problems? And I don't want to go through that. You know, I don't even want to just stand there and hopefully look into Jesus' eyes and go, oh, yeah, I did that thing. You know, it makes you want to be a better person.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yep, agreed. It's very worthwhile. Very worthwhile.
Yeah, good.
Mm-hmm. So off we go. Off we go. So, as it opens, we're still with Virgil, too.
Yes.
Virgil took us through hell, took the pilgrims through hell. So the main character is still the pilgrim, or Dante himself. And Virgil is starting to take him up the mountain. Takes off right where Inferno ended.
And by this time, I'm very fond of Virgil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dante does a good job of, he turns to him so many times to ask a question, and a lot of times he'll just kind of look at him and think, I wish I could talk to those people. And Virgil, he doesn't even have to say, Virgil just says, go ahead. Be quick.
You bet. You know. Yeah. That's right. That's right. And, the opening of this is really interesting. So he doesn't go straight into purgatory. There's this thing called, what was it? Anti-purgatory.
Like an antechamber.
Yeah, exactly. And they float around in there, not unlike hell, right? There was, we had the pagans and all that stuff that were just outside of hell, too. So, they need to climb up some mountain in order just to get to the gate. And part of it, he didn't actually climb, too. He was carried while he slept.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because it's surrounded by water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the first thing, he comes out and, you know, they meet Cato, who's like, wow, you guys are filthy. Uh-huh. Wash up.
Yeah.
And so it's like a marshy place. Too, because he says take a reed and, you know, put it around. Yeah,
and that was something too. He had a cord tied around him in hell, that basically so that Virgil and he would not get separated. And then one of the first things that happens in this one is the cord is replaced with a reed.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Which is supple and not too much of a burden.
Yeah. and a living thing, I guess.
And flexible.
Right. I don't think of a cord as a, even though it may be made out of plants or something like that, I don't think of that as alive. But right. When you say reed, it feels like it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
That's a connotation it had in my head anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was interesting. So it's almost like it's more hopeful, just that it's a reed is a more hopeful thing than a cord.
Yeah, and it's almost a symbol of what he himself will become, more alive, flexible, because he'll understand his place and who he is better.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, right.
And then one of the things that happens is other souls arrive on the island. I might be skipping something, I guess.
Oh, that's okay. But yeah.
I love it because they're brought by this angel who's like a ferryman in a boat. And he, and just using his wings, and they're all singing, which introduces a theme that I really, really loved is every time they go to a new terrace, everybody's singing a song or there's some song being sung that kind of reflects not only what the emphasis is on that terrace, but the higher goal for all of it.
Yeah. Has somebody compiled this into an album?
Dante's songs.
Yeah. Dante's songs. Purgatory. The songs of purgatory. I'm sure somebody's done it.
Probably. That'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, they're all in Latin. It's just the first line or two in Latin, and I was continually having to go look it up and then going back and writing it down in English next to cool. it so I could keep track of it.
Right, right. Some of them I recognize, you know, like the Agnes Dei.
Ave Maria.
You're right, exactly. That was a striking thing. So everybody's singing in Purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's wailing in Inferno. Some of the sounds that we heard in Inferno were horrific that he was describing.
Yes.
And then here, there's a song going on.
And they're discordant in Hell because every individual is just expressing themselves, whereas here they're singing together because you have to.
Right, right.
They all have the same goal.
True.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And the goal is heaven, right? Then there was even one point at which, and I guess this is farther along, but one point at which someone was ready to move on from purgatory,
mm-hmm.
and that was kind of majestic too. And everybody's like, "Yay!"
Oh yeah, everybody stops because mm-hmm. the other thing where you're continually seeing reflections back is there's a huge earthquake every time a soul's ready to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Big earthquake, and the earthquake that you always hear mentioned in Hell is the one where Christ came down.
True.
So this is your moving up to Christ.
Yeah, that's neat. I didn't make that connection too. Man, there's so many connections.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's neat. That's neat. I've got to read it multiple times.
I feel like you could almost just make a canto a day, just keep working your way through it.
Doing it, and you're like, oh, I see that one. I see that one. That's neat. Yeah, it'd be fun. Now, you've read more than the Musa translation of this as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what do you find between the translations? When you read a different one, is it significantly different for you?
I haven't gone back and compared any of them.
Yeah, I was just curious if they felt differently or...
Well, they do some just because, you know, one person is trying to work out a poetic scheme in order to express it, or another one like Anthony Esolen, if that's how you say his name, he is using more, how do I say it, vibrant language, mm-hmm. because Dante's Italian was the everyday Italian. And he's not making it, you know, common, but he's, you know, it's not like got current slang and stuff, but it'll have more forceful words sometimes, maybe. Okay. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think I just kind of sink into it wherever I am.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. And again, the notes, as long as you've got good notes, I think you get something out of it each time, no matter what you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's got to hit you, but you also have to understand what's going on too. And I do like these notes. The other translations I've read are good, but too. Mm. But these notes are really clear. I can see why a lot of schools use them.
Okay.
They're teaching it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so here's an example of Moose's notes from the third canto. Then they see a band of souls moving toward them with unbelievable slowness, which is what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And they set out to meet them in order to ask directions. The souls are amazed to see the pilgrim's shadow. Their spokesman, Manfred, explains that despite his excommunication by the church, he has been saved through everlasting love by repenting at the very end of his life. Mm. Because of this delay, however, he is required to wait in ante-purgatory 30 times as long as he waited on earth to repent, though this period can be shortened by the good prayers of the faithful in the world. So, right. Yeah, so that's an example of a note from Mark Moose's edition.
And the person, the example that you read about is, it encapsulates so many things that we're going to encounter in one way or another on the journey. So putting him there in that ante-purgatory is the sign. And this is the thing where it's so layered, you know, that's the sign to us of, wow, have we thought about how long we delayed? Have we thought about, you know, the penalty if we're struggling against something that we really probably figure we should do? And but prayers of others can help us, which is a huge theme throughout, asking for intercessory prayer.
Yeah.
You know,
and that so. Is, and we, that is Catholic doctrine. It's important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah, so I do really like these notes as well.
Oh yeah. 'Cause there was another one about, I think this group of people that really struck me, and it was talking about how they're kind of all, they don't know where to go. They're all moving around together, jostling each other around. And it's like sheep without a leader or something, or sheep without a shepherd. Oh, it says, yeah, as sheep will often start to leave the fold. So he's described them. They've all been pressed together. They walk in a one little huddle and they stop and stare. And so the emphasis is being made here that they're like sheep.
Mm.
And it says the comparison has a double force. In the first place, since they chose to live their lives without the spiritual guidance of the church, they now have no leader, no shepherd, but blindly follow the sheep in front without knowing why. In the second place, this slow forward movement without knowing the way is in fact the virtue of faith as defined by St. Thomas Aquinas. Thus, these souls carry out Virgil's earlier admonition to be content with the quia, without knowing the why or how.
Hmm.
So just, it's kind of like, well, here we are. We can't understand everything. Do you trust the church or do you not? I mean, at some point, and we're not talking about things where you can see someone is clearly twisting it around, but at some point you go, there's 2,000 years worth of guidance here. I'm going to look into it, but up to that point, I'm just going to go with it. You know, such as the different sacraments and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not talking about blind, unthinking faith, but you can't know everything. You can't know every fact for sure. You have to use your best judgment. And when that makes sense to you is when God starts going, now it's on you. Are you going to live by it or not?
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to go there.
No,
but
no, I like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And that's how these notes can kind of help open things up, and especially also for the people who I didn't focus on as much as I could. But when he's talking to someone, if you go look at those notes, it will give you the historical point, but it will sometimes also say, okay, this person did things that made Dante get exiled for. He himself has to come to terms with this. Mm. How does he feel about it? All these things helped contribute to him being where he is too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so it lets you deeper into the poem, because then you stop and think about, how do I feel about my enemies? How would I feel if I got to purgatory and went, you're here ahead of me? How dare you? You know?
Yeah.
What about me? Oh, I guess I need to be under that rock a little longer, you know, whatever. Walking around.
Yeah, it's the prodigal son situation, isn't
right.
it?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So once they work their way through the antechamber and start finding their way up, what they find is there are all these different terraces or levels, I guess, that they have to go up Mount Purgatory. And there are the seven deadly, they correspond to the seven deadly sins, which are all presented as being linked to love that has somehow gone wrong. There's a really helpful chart in this book.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. Misdirected love, deficient love, and excessive love.
Yeah.
Yep.
And anti-purgatory is all the late repentant and various levels of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so excessive love is the avaricious and the prodigal, the gluttonous and the lustful.
Mm-hmm. And so they're at the top of the mountain.
They're at the top, yeah. And so this also kind of is the mirror, in a way, to hell, where hell you start off at the least sins and go, or, you know, the least whatever, and go down to the bottom where it's the greatest with Lucifer there. And then when you come out on purgatory, it's, well, once you get into purgatory, not the anti-purgatory, but it's the greatest sins that you're doing penance for. The proud, the envious, the wrathful. And as you go up, it gets lighter and lighter. And to illustrate this, when Dante gets there, an angel puts 7 P's on his forehead. And these are things, as he goes up each level, one of them gets knocked off by a different angel or brushed off, or depending on, you know, his poetic communication there. And he feels, he'll go, oh, I feel lighter. This is easier now.
Yeah, and yeah, he's having difficulty climbing a slope, and then when that's removed, he suddenly is like full of energy, and he can walk up the slope no problem.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so then also on each terrace or level or whatever you want to call it, there's also, I loved this so much, a different kind of artwork for each one that corresponds with the 3 good examples, both from biblical and pagan examples, and 3 bad examples from biblical and pagan examples of the sin, whether overcoming it or falling prey to it. Mm-hmm. And they're all put in ways that they will benefit the people who are there. So, for instance, in the one for the proud, they're on the floor because these people are carrying around big rocks and they're bent double under them. So they have to be able to see these examples. And on the one for the envious, their eyes are sewn shut, because when you see things, that's when it causes you problems. And there's also something about how hawks were tamed that you have to read the notes or you'd never get it.
Mm-hmm.
But those are all spoken in the air, because they can't see anything, so they have to hear the examples.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And there was one that I loved because it was like, I was going, wow, you're so prescient. It was like almost like synesthesia, or I don't know. It was tying together all the senses, where there was one where it's all carved into the rock. But he's like, but as I looked at each one, it's like I could hear and see the movements and hear the sounds that each one, it was like each one came to life for him, but without coming to life. It was so neat the way he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Very imaginative.
Well, that's cool. And what canto is that in? Do you have that written down?
I can't remember now.
Okay, I was just curious because I want to reread that.
Oh, my gosh.
Fascinating stuff. But, yeah, I remember you talking about, like, the proud. And, you know, Dante actually hunched down himself so he could talk to them.
Yeah.
So he spent, like, that whole time all hunched over while they're carrying rocks around so he could speak. And so, yeah, it's like he's experiencing every single terrace. Somehow he's experiencing it.
Yeah, because on the this might be wrong, though. Oh, no, that was, I was thinking on the one of the envious, wasn't it, smoky? But that was the wrathful, because it was so smoky and he couldn't really see. And I thought, oh, right, that's just how you are when you're really, really angry. It clouds your brain.
Yeah, you can't see, right.
Yeah, and you can't see, right. Mm-hmm. I went, oh, genius, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at a passage that I particularly liked, and it's right at the beginning of Canto 6, and I'm trying to figure out which terrace he's on at that point. And I think he's not in anti-purgatory still, is he?
No, there's another chart that's further on that has the organization. So let's see.
Yeah, so he's still in the anti-purgatory. I'm sorry, I'm pulling us back.
That's all right.
But So he's leaving, you know, the indolent. He leaves the indolent in Canto 5. So in Canto 6, he's still, they're getting ready now to move into purgatory. At the very beginning, this description I just loved it. It says, the loser, when a game of dice breaks up, despondent, often lingers there as he, learning the hard way, replays all his throws. The crowd leaves with the winner, some in front, some tugging at him from behind, the rest close to his side beg to be recognized. He keeps on going, listening to them all. The ones who get a handout will not push, and this is his protection from the crowd. I was that man caught in a begging throng, turning my face toward one and then the next, buying my way out with my promises. I just love that passage. Mm-hmm. It just seems so truthful.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody wanted something from him. You know, please, you know, do this, do that. You know, they're trying to get into purgatory and through purgatory, tired of waiting. Yeah. And then they're treating him like he's this big winner. So he's just comparing it to that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I wanted to read it because I loved it.
There are so many places like that where he'll say something. And there was another one where they join up with a soul later on who's the cause of the earthquake. He's going on through to the top with them. And he says, you know how it is when we didn't even notice where we were or how much time had passed. We were so interested in talking. And I just, the way he said it, I was like, yeah, exactly. I know exactly what he means. He's so good at relating the human condition so that you put yourself into it. You go, oh, yeah, I know exactly what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I did find the place.
Okay. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, here we go. So this is Canto 10, and this is where they're finding this after they pass through the gate of purgatory. And so there are the walls have ledges that all have in white marble carved different scenes that have examples of humility. And so that's the goal that everybody has. So this is what starts you off into purgatory. So the first one is the Annunciation. The second carving is David, King David, who'd put aside his splendor to dance in humility before the Lord. And the third is the Emperor Trajan, halting his mighty array of warriors on horseback to listen to a poor widow's plea for justice. And so when he describes it, he says, and standing there before we took a step, I realized that all the inner cliff, which rising sheer offered no means to climb, was pure white marble. On its flawless face were carvings that would surely put to shame not only Polyclete, but nature too. The angel who came down to announce on earth the peace longed for by weeping centuries, which broke the ancient ban and opened heaven, appeared before our eyes, a shape alive, carved in an attitude of marble grace, an effigy that could have spoken words. One would have sworn that he was saying Ave, for she who turned the key, opening for us the highest love, was also figured there. And then he says, and Virgil says, well, look at some of the other ones. And he says, and so I turned my eyes and looked ahead past Mary's figure to that point where he who prompted me now stood. And there I saw another story cut into the stone. Crossing in front of Virgil, I drew near so that my eyes could take all of it in. Carved in the spread of marble there, I saw the cart and oxen with the holy ark, a warning not to exceed one's competence. Ahead of it moved seven separate choirs testing my senses. One of these said no. The other one said, yes, they truly sing. With equal art, the smoke which censers poured traced so faithfully that eyes and nose could not decide between a yes or no. And what it's making clear as you go on is when he's saying, my senses couldn't tell what was going on. One was saying no, and the other said, yes, they truly sing. And then he says, my nose couldn't decide if I could really smell the smoke or not.
Oh, wow.
And as he goes on, what you're seeing is that it's so realistic that it's like it's coming alive for him in some way that he can't understand and we can't understand. It's pulling him into the scene.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I don't know if that made it clear or not.
No, but it does. Yeah.
Okay.
It's fascinating stuff. So off he goes into the, we're just kind of picking out things that, that we like, I guess, because we can't go through all of it. But, I found a spot I mentioned earlier where he addressed the reader. And yeah. In Canto 10, let me make sure that this is Canto 10. I'm using a Kindle version. Oops, sorry. Canto 8. Canto 8, a few lines in. He was walking into an area, and the first part is, again, I love it. You know, it was the hour when a sailor's thoughts, the first day out, turn homeward, and his heart yearns for the loved ones he has left behind.
Mm-hmm.
The hour when the novice pilgrim aches with love, the far-off tolling of a bell now seems to him to mourn the dying day. And they're singing Te Lucis Ante with such reverence. Yeah. So he's still in the antechamber, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he says, sharpen your sight, reader. The truth this time is covered by a thinner veil, and so the meaning should be easy to perceive.
Yeah.
You know, so here he just directly addresses us.
Yeah. I'm expecting you to get it more.
Right.
Attention.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing. Now, did these three come out at the same time, or were, you know, it was like Game of Thrones where the part one came out and everybody was waiting for.
I feel like it all came out as one piece.
Okay. Yeah.
We'd have to look that up, I guess.
I was just curious if he would have put something in there like that in response to things that he's been told about the first one. It's too hard. It's too hard for us to understand. All right. Listen, reader, this is going to be easier.
Yeah. That I do not know. Isn't that funny? I just assumed if he wrote this whole long thing, he just kept writing and writing and writing and fixing it and fixing it. Because, you know, for one thing, it's like The Lord of the Rings. It came out in three pieces.
Yeah.
But he was writing and rewriting up to the point it came out. It came out in three pieces because of the necessity of wartime and the lack of paper and all that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
And he didn't want it that way. I feel like this would have come out altogether because he wouldn't want to leave you hanging after Inferno. He wants to take you all the way to heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's handy that it's got to be broken up into three pieces theologically and also so we can understand it. But and also for his, you know, his rhyme scheme and his numbering and all that stuff to work out, which is important to him.
Right, right.
Well, and even this is broken up because it's you've got the anti-purgatory, you have the levels of purgatory, and then you get where they go through this cleansing fire. And I have to say, I really felt for him. He was saying, I stood there looking at it going, I remember how burned bodies look. I just didn't want to go in there. Right, and Virgil's going, no, just put the edge of your robe in. Put the edge of my robe in. It's okay. Doesn't mean it didn't hurt for a second.
Yeah.
A lot.
Right, right.
But he's like, you can't get to Beatrice if you don't go through. And once you go through, what you find is what's at the top of Mount Purgatory? Eden. Paradise.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the earthly paradise, so it's not the end of everything, but it's the forerunner, the symbol of how good things are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I liked where he describes wandering around in purgatory some, or not purgatory, I'm sorry, through the Garden of Eden. And it says, this is the beginning of Canto 28. It says, now eager to explore on every side the heavenly forest thick with living green, which made the bright new morning light more soft. Without delay, I left the bank behind and slowly made my way across the plain whose soil gave its own fragrance to the air. My forehead felt the stirring of sweet air, whose flowing rhythm ever always stayed the same and struck no harder than the gentlest breeze. And in the constant moving air, each branch with trembling leaves was bending to one side toward where the holy mount first casts its shade. They did not curve so sharply toward the ground that little birds among the topmost leaves could not continue practicing their art. They welcomed in full-throated joyful sound the day's beginning to their leafy boughs, whose soughing sound accompanied their song. that sound we hear passed on from branch to branch in the pine forests of the shore of Chiasi when Aeolus sets free Sirocco winds. And it just keeps going with this wonderful description of what it's like there. And it's so evocative. I just felt like I was there.
Oh, yeah, me too. And I highlighted something shortly after that water. It says, the water here does not spring from a source that needs to be restored by changing mists like streams on earth that lose, then gain their force. It issues from a spring of constant flow, immutable, which, by the will of God, regains what it pours forth on either side. The water here on this side flows with the power to erase sin's memory, and on that side, the memory of good deeds is restored. It is called Lethe here, L-E-T-H-E, Unal there, beyond. And if one does not first drink here, he will not come to know its powers there. Which is not so much description, but it's something that I highlighted that was just a few paragraphs down from where you were at.
Well, and I loved the mercy of those two rivers. It had never occurred to me that once you get through paying your penance and everything, that you still know what you've done, but that it might hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the mercy that's shown of you've paid your price, you don't need to think about that anymore. There's no need because you're done. You've made it. Why bring it up again? Unless it's to, you know, help you relate to other people. And if you're fully free, you don't need that. And so that's the memory of your good deeds that's strengthened. And I just thought, what a wonderful concept. And also, it carries on that water theme, which has begun at the very beginning where he's got to wash himself off because he just got out of hell. And it's so water, it's he says, for better waters now, my little bark is floating on. That kind of, it's how he starts off for his journey, right? And he said, so water is the image of cleansing and purification, which marks, of course, this whole central part. And so he says it's better waters at that point. It's not the best, but it's not the worst. It's better.
Yeah.
And you get to the top and you have these two rivers, which are the best. And I like that whole reminder. It carries back, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially when I think of hell, now that I think about it, think of how water is used there. The souls are buried underneath boiling pitch and they can't come up, or demons will strike them. I mean, all the comparisons with hell, you suddenly look back and realize how chaotic and dreadful and horrible it is because you've got this to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know it while you're there, but you see it more clearly to me when you're here on purgatory.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just something about it that's, yeah, more clear.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us it would be.
Yes, he did, didn't he? The veil is thinner here.
Right. Which is fascinating. How did he do that?
Because he's a genius. I guess that's why we're still reading it all this time later.
Yeah.
One of the things I liked is, before we get into Eden or whatever, is that souls move on when they feel ready. Mm. He's like, oh, so you got set free. And he goes, well, no, I could tell I was ready. And so that's also trusting to your honesty and your free will, because you can't really cheat while you're there, for one thing. The angels
and discernment, right? It's discernment.
Yeah.
We talk about discernment in RCIA. You know, RCIA is supposed to not be a structured, you know, you will do this and then you will be here and then you will do that, right? It's supposed to be, hey, I feel like I'm ready. I feel like I'm ready to join the church, right?
Yeah, it's a spiritual journey, even though you're learning, you know, essentially, I guess what you would call the rules, rules and beliefs and everything, that you're going to be in this club. Here's what you're going to believe. Do you really want to be in here? And that's why it's so long, 6 months long, the classes.
Sure.
But that's, for me it was, and we weren't doing anything special with small groups or anything. We were just taking the classes.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. For certain, for certain.
That fuller understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, yeah, before we get to the end, there's Canto, XIX, 19.
I know.
There's two things in that that just blew me away. Uh-huh. And the first one was the siren. Virgil has a dream about a siren. So he sees someone that he calls loathsome. And then as he gazes upon it or her, she becomes beautiful and starts to sing. And she says, I am the sweet siren. I am the song who beguiles sailors in mid-sea, enticing them, inviting them to joy. And then it says he sees the other, ripped her garment off, exposed her as far down as the paunch. The stench pouring from her woke me from sleep.
Yeah.
So that dream is just really intense. Musa says, this loathsome female, as we shall learn later, symbolizes the vices of avarice, gluttony, and lust, which the pilgrim will see being purged on the upper three terraces. So it's like a symbol or a metaphor about how, you know, you see something as horrible, and then somehow it or you convince yourself that, oh, this is what I want and this is what's good. Mm. And then you may experience it or whatever, and then as you expose it, it becomes what it is again. It's kind of a metaphor of sinful nature, right? Us convincing ourselves of things, us seeing things that we want to see so that we can do or justify what we do.
Interesting, and then right?
Now we can see what it really is again. There's always that cycle where I know this is wrong, but I'm justifying it. And mm-hmm. Oh gosh, it's still wrong. Mm-hmm. later, once you start to see consequences.
Yeah.
And
then you go back to it again.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, that whole image, it really seared into my head. I thought it was terrific.
Well, and I was reading a commentary. I can't remember what exactly it said, but there's something Beatrice says about that dream later on when he is with her. Mm-hmm. And it kind of implies a future encounter also, because Dante is alive. He's eventually going to leave this and go back to his real life. So he will again encounter that siren.
Yeah.
You know, so she's implying that it's not just in your dream. It's for real. You know, you're going to have to fight this always. And those dreams are interesting because he spends three nights on that mountain and he has three dreams. And in some way they're metaphorical, but in the other way they reflect reality, mm-hmm. as you're saying.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And then he talks to Virgil. And then this little piece that I'll read, it ends up in an image that, again, just blew me away.
Yeah.
So the pilgrim says at the very end of what he says, he just explained his dream, and he says, this is a vision that still fills me full of dread. I cannot get the thought out of my mind. And then Virgil says, you saw, he said, that ageless sorceress for whom alone the souls above must weep. You also saw how men escape from her. Let these words be enough. Move faster now and look up at the lure of the mighty spheres that the eternal king forever spins. It's like, keep your gaze forward. Then the hawk who, now this is just, no one's speaking now. Mm-hmm. The hawk who has been staring at its feet will, when he hears the cry, stretch wide his wings, ready to soar toward the food he knows is there. I did the same. I strained to reach the end of the ascending passage in the rock and enter on another circling ledge. When I came out and stood on the fifth round, I saw spirits stretched out upon the dust, lying face downward, all of them in tears. That blew me away.
Yeah.
It's just, reading this, the imagery is just stunning, what he's able to do.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm reading it in translation. I just find it amazing. And but yeah, I mean, I can see this. I can see him climbing, and I can see him standing up on a ledge and seeing what he describes here. And the spirits all stretched out on the dust, lying face downward, you know, all prostrate. Just blows me away. I just think it's just powerful.
Right. Well, and that's the good point about the translation, because the other thing it does is sometimes, as you're saying, it just hits you like, you know, right in the heart. He's able to reach out through this poem and this translation all this way later and have you go, oh my gosh, yes, that's something that means something to me. That's important.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, right.
It's something that you think about, that you meditate on, that you take into everyday life with you.
Yeah, and it makes you think about that stuff.
Yeah.
And then later on, too, you know, the pilgrim and Virgil, the notes say, as the pilgrim and Virgil pick their way through the prostrate souls of the avaricious?
Avaricious,
right. So they're greedy. Picking their way. They're like, excuse me, pardon me, sorry, excuse me. Everybody's laying prostrate. Excuse me. Sorry. Oh,
oops,
apologize.
Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, just something. Just something
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, really loved it. So, well, oops, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't he, and of course I'm getting confused, does he at some point say, you know, if they're just shades, how are they carrying rocks and things? Am I making that up? And Virgil says, well, what you're seeing is the manifestation of what your soul has taken on.
Mm-hmm.
This is because this is your essence. You're seeing purely the person.
Right.
And what their soul is like right now and what they're trying to shed.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're going to get close to wrapping up time. So we're about to leave Virgil at the very end of this poem. Virgil.
Sad.
Yeah. See you later, Virgil.
I know. And he didn't even get to say goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And who picks him up?
Beatrice
it is, right.
One of my favorite parts,
mm-hmm.
because he meets Beatrice, or, you know, and she's dressed in these very symbolic colors, and there she is, all gorgeous and everything. She's going to take him on for the next thing, and what does she do? Does she say, hey, I'm so glad you made it? She goes, all right, first of all, what? I die, and you go catting around after other ladies, using your poetry for the wrong thing. You're just not paying attention to what you should. When I died, you should have been going for the higher stuff. You should have been looking for joy and freedom and, you know, whatever these love things that can't die. But no, you just sank down. I'm very upset. And he's like, what? Well, wait.
Yeah, but...
Virgil? Oh, crap.
Oh, that's too great.
And she doesn't even go, yeah, bummer, man. She's just like, no. Eye to eye, we're doing this right here.
Man.
And the angels are singing and going, oh, no, don't be so hard on him. And she's like, you guys don't even know. You live in heaven. This is an earth thing. Back off. And I'm just like... I love this so much because he's been through the fire. He's been through everything. He can see, his eyes have been tempered, so he can see the bright light. He gets it. And she's like, now you have to handle, here's the thing that nobody's brought up because it just hasn't come up on any of these circles. Here's your big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls down crying, going, you're right. I was so wrong. I can't believe I did that. I wasted everything. And
wow.
Then she goes, okay. So, all right, come here. It's all right. we'll move on.
That's great.
She's always a bit stern with him, but
yeah.
And because now, she's just straightforward.
That's
go
right.
ahead.
And now she's gonna be his guide in the last part, is that right?
Yeah, and okay. through a good portion of paradise afterward.
Okay, right. Yeah, that's what I meant. The next.
Wait, yeah, the Virgil. Yeah, she doesn't go all the way, but she goes to, you know, the kind of the way Virgil did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. looking forward to that because I have not read that yet. Paradiso, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
And then there's this huge allegory that nobody really understands. And so the guesses are this and this and this and the history of the church and this.
Like, no. Are you talking about the whore or whatever? Yeah, the chariot.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
And this giant beats the crap out of her. it's very odd. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like she comes in, she's like, hello, hello, hello.
Yeah.
And then something comes in and takes care of it.
Yeah, so people argue about if that was about the end times or about the history of the church in general, or and it's just, you know, you could kind of take out of it what you want to.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting really crazy at the end. So
like,
obviously that part
finished.
Of purgatory is not really my favorite.
Exactly, exactly.
Because I'm stupid there. Not informed, shall we say.
Yeah. Reader, if I had space to write more words, I'd sing, at least in part, of that sweet draft, which never could have satisfied my thirst.
Mm.
But now I have completed every page planned for my poem's second canticle. I am checked by the bridle of my art.
Yes.
Yep. So there that is.
I do love that when he's saying, okay, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
No room, no space.
Yep.
He says, from those holiest waters, water again, I returned to her reborn, a tree renewed, in bloom with newborn foliage, immaculate, eager to rise, now ready for the stars.
The stars, right there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Get the stars.
Yep. That's cool.
And, the thing is you think, so now you're going to go to heaven. What is up with this? And just as a tiny preview, he and Beatrice start flying through the spheres of the heavens. So to the moon, to Mars.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And they meet heavenly souls.
Nice.
Yeah.
So heavenly souls live on Mars and...
He's got questions about that we'll all get answered later
right.
on.
You bet. That's where Frank Sinatra is.
Yeah. Fly me to the moon. I need to look up the other words to it, but.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, I know. That's
cool.
But you do come through to me this feeling that, you know, purgatory. Those penances aren't the most fun, but they're super fair. Nobody there minds it because they've got their past. They're graduating. It's just how long does it take? And the fact that Dante quite often will say, oh, my eyes hurt. The light was so bright. And Virgil will say, when you've gotten through this, your eyes will be a little stronger. So it was a wonderful illustration that this isn't because I'm being mean, says God. It's because you just simply cannot take in everything. It would hurt you.
Mm.
This is to prepare you for the glory that I want you to have. I want you to be with me.
Cool. That's wonderful. Yep, you bet.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's the thing where the vision of heaven is so surprising to me and so... It kind of haunts me.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's something to really look forward to in that third book.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great. And I'm going to start that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
A canto a day.
A canto a day.
Was That's there anything right. else that...
Yeah, nothing. I was looking through all my notes here. Okay. I think I touched on everything that I was hoping to.
Yep.
But what a fascinating, you know... The imagery, again, is what is striking. And I always said that before, but that's that's what captures me when I'm reading this. And I get blown away by certain images. Not unlike Inferno, but in Inferno, there was a lot of images that were horrific. Mm-hmm. And these were not particularly pleasant, but still just they weren't like the Inferno images.
Well, because of the way everybody took it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in terms of the things that weren't very pleasant, they were all kind of like, oh, yeah, I earned it. And it's going to be, when I'm done, this is going to be great. You know, they don't seem to begrudge it at all.
Right, right.
Agreed. So,
yeah, and I like to think of being that way. And I would say that was kind of goes to my last thing, which was at one point, and Dante wants to do something, and Virgil says, from here on, let your pleasure be your guide. This is Canto 27. And so Dante is free to follow his desires because he's free from sin and can trust his free will.
Mm.
He's not having to try to fight, is this right or is this wrong? And I thought, oh, how wonderful that would be.
Yeah.
That what I desire and what I really long for is all the stuff I want to do this stuff, and I can because I can trust myself.
Wow. Yeah. Hunger and thirst for righteousness, right?
Yeah.
And then, So if that's what you're desiring, then all your desires are
right.
Right.
But exploring Eden and all those things is like, whatever you want, your desires are going to take you to a place that's better than you can imagine. And none of us have ever been in that position. You know, we desire good things, but it's like that dream. How easily do we turn the things that we know we shouldn't desire into something we do? And so it's that kind of that perfect vision of what real pure free will is. I mean, it gave me something to really look forward to go, oh, kind of restful. The struggle's over, you know?
Right, right. Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I know I used the word before, but very worthwhile. I love having read this. Yeah. It's definitely worth the journey.
Loved having gone through it in order to talk about it. There's something really different, as we've said before, about that.
Yeah. Cool.
So, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for picking it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess this was a mutual pick, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was trying to not go with my desire to go, I'm not the one who really
picked it. That's right.
We did it together.
That's true. Yeah. But I have enjoyed the trip so far. I can't wait for the last part, which will be not next episode, but the episode after.
So next month.
Yeah. So the next episode is a double feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. High Noon and Rio Bravo. Both Westerns.
Saddle up, partner.
Saddle up. I'm really excited. I feel like watching a Western. So how cool is that? It's been a while.
Yeah. I know. And these are two very different but very good Westerns. So
cool. Yeah.
I chose them because Rio Bravo is an answer film, which you've talked about many a time.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said, I'm not the craziest about what you said in High Noon, and I'm going to say this in Rio Bravo. So when you're watching, anybody listening, kind of keep that in mind and think about it. Cool. It makes them more interesting to think about.
Nice. All right. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, off to paradise.
Yeah. Fly me to the moon.
Fly me to the moon, right. Speaking of the Rat Pack, Dean Martin's in Rio Bravo.
Yes. I love him so much.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Great. And Grace Kelly.
Yes.
Heartthrob.
Grace Kelly. Fantastic.
High Noon. That's right.
That's great.
Yeah. So many good actors
in all
these.
Looking forward to it. So. All right.
All right.
Okay. Well, take care, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.